Te Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Samambhonu, Chapter 60, Krishna teases Rukmini, Text 35. Satyam vyahad eva guna vya urakramata.
Satyam vyahad eva guna urakramata.
Sete samudra upalambana matra atma.
Sete samudra upalambana matra atma.
Nityam kat indriya gunai krita vigrahastvam.
Nityam kat indriya gunai
Vat sevakai nipapadam vidutam tamodyam.
Vat sevakai nipapadam
vidutam tamodyam. Satyam vayad eva guna bhya ukramanta.
Satyam vayad eva guna ukramanta.
Shitte samudra upalambana matra atma. Nityam kat indriya gunai krita vigrahastvam.
Nityam kat indriya gunai krita vigrahastvam.
Tvat sevakai nripapadam vidhutam tamodam.
Tvat sevakai nripapadam vidhutam tamodam.
Satyam bayad eva gunya biyat ukramanta.
Satyam vayaya bhumeja ukramanta.
Shitte samudra upalambana matra atma.
Shitte samudra upalambana matra atma.
Nityam kat indriya gunai krita vigrahastvam.
Nityam kat indriya gunai krita vigrahastvam.
Tvat sevakai nipapadam vidutam tamodyam.
Tvat sevakai nipapadam vidutam tamodyam.
Out of fear.
Okay.
Eva.
Eva.
As if.
Gunabhya
of the material modes. Urukrama.
Urukrama.
O you who perform transcendental feats.
O you who perform transcendental feats.
Anta.
Anta.
Within.
Sete.
You have lain down.
You have lain down.
Samudre.
Samudre.
In the ocean.
In the ocean.
Upalambana matra.
Upalambana matra.
Pure awareness.
Pure awareness.
Atma.
Atma.
The Supreme Soul.
The Supreme Soul.
Nityam.
Nityam.
Always.
Always.
Kat.
Kat.
Bad.
Bad.
Indriya gunai.
Indriya gunai.
Against all the material senses.
Against all the material senses.
Krita vigraha.
Krita vigraha.
Battling.
Battling.
Tvam.
Tvam.
You.
You.
Tvat.
Tvat.
Your.
Your.
Sevakai.
Sevakai.
By the servants.
By the servants.
Nipa.
Nipa.
Of a king.
Of a king.
Padam.
Padam.
The position.
Position.
Vidhutam,
vidhutam,
rejected.
Rejected.
Tamaha,
tamaha,
darkness.
Andam,
blind.
Blind.
Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yes, my Lord Urukram, you lay down within the ocean as if afraid of the material modes, and thus in pure consciousness you appear within the heart as the Supersoul. You are always battling against the foolish material senses, and indeed, even your servants reject the privilege of royal dominion, which leads to the blindness of darkness. Please repeat. Yes.
Yes.
My Lord Urukram.
My Lord Urukram.
You lay down within the ocean as if afraid of the material modes. And thus in pure consciousness. You appear within the heart as the super soul. You are always battling against the foolish material senses. And indeed even your servants reject the privilege of royal dominion, which leads to the blindness of ignorance. Purport. In the 12th text, Lord Krishna says, Raja Bhyo Vibhyati Su Bhyo Sumadram Saranam Gatam. Out of fear of the kings, we took shelter of the ocean. Here Srimati Rukmini Devi points out that the actual rulers of this world are the gunas, the material modes of nature, which impel the living beings to act. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that because Lord Krishna fears that his devotees will come under the influence of the modes of nature and become entangled in sense gratification, he enters the internal ocean of their hearts, where he remains as the omnipresent supersoul. Omniscient supersoul. Upalambana matra atma. Thus he protects his devotees. The word upalambana matra also indicates that the Lord is the object of meditation for his devotees. In text 12, Lord Krishna also said, Balavidhi krita dvaisam. We created enmity with the powerful. Here Srimati Rukmini Devi points out that it is the material senses which are actually powerful in this world. The Supreme Lord has taken up the battle against sense gratification on the part of his devotees, and thus he is constantly trying to help them in their struggle for spiritual purity. When the devotees become free of unwanted material habits, the Lord reveals himself to them, and then the eternal loving relationship between the Lord and his devotees becomes an irrevocable fact. In the same verse, Krishna stated, Tvaktva Nripra Sanam. We renounce the royal throne. But here Srimati Rukmini Devi points out that the position of political supremacy in the world usually implicates so-called powerful leaders in darkness and blindness. As the saying goes, power corrupts. Thus even the Lord's servants tend to shy away from political intrigue and power politics. The Lord himself, being completely satisfied in his own spiritual bliss, would hardly be interested in occupying mundane political positions. Thus Srimati Rukmini Devi correctly interprets the Lord's actions as evidence of his supreme transcendental nature. Om Jnana Timinandasya Gnanjina Shilakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Vena Maha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, but my eyes were opened by my spiritual master, who came to me with the thoughts of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So, we're continuing with the pastime, very wonderful pastime, of Krishna teasing Rukmini. Of course, he wanted to invoke anger, loving anger within the mind of his dearly beloved first wife, and enjoy her beautiful face decorated with anger. Because Rukmini Devi never displays such symptoms. So Krishna was wondering, perhaps I can provoke them. Of course, his other wife, or his second wife, Satyabhama, she was always angry. She was feisty by nature. She is feisty by nature. When Rukmini Devi was given a Parijata flower by Lord Krishna, Satyabhama became furious in the anger of jealousy. Where is my flower? In fact, where is my whole tree of Parijata flowers? So Krishna went to such efforts to pacify her by taking her to the heavenly planets, stealing a tree, or uprooting a tree, which Indra took as an offense, and then Krishna had to battle with Indra and defeat him and put him in his place once again. Because this is Indra's tendency, is to get a little bit puffed up due to his position of worship. And actually we'll explore that potential for one in a leadership position to get puffed up and therefore lose the proper perspective of one's service. So Indra, Lord Krishna defeated Indra, and Indra again, oh that's right, I'm a servant of Krishna. And the tree was taken back to the earth planet and planted in the courtyard of Queen Satyabhama. And Krishna was then expecting, well now Rukmini will come to me, you know, with her jealous envy, and I'll have to do something for her to balance things out once again. But Rukmini Devi never said anything about that. So, in this way, Krishna was very impressed with her sobriety, her surrender. She simply wanted to serve Krishna in a pleasing manner. But Krishna was curious, perhaps I can invoke anger within her. So then he began to, on a beautiful moonlit night, with the bees humming in the garden around the beautiful flowers, which were, in the scents of which were wafting through the windows, mixing with the scent of the incense that was burning in vast quantities, leaking out through the holes in the windows, with the moonlight casting patterns upon the floor through the lattice work of the windows. Rukmini Devi was serving Krishna, who was seated upon her bedstead. The maidservants were fanning him, and Rukmini Devi herself, out of a desire to serve the Lord, her husband, took the fan, the chamara fan, in her own hand and began to fan him. And then Krishna was contemplating her beauty, and then he thought, I'm going to try and evoke her anger. So he began to tease her in many ways, saying, actually, you made a mistake. You should not have married me. Why? Because I am unqualified. Nobody knows my varna. I am simply, you know, some people say he's a cowherd boy. Why? Because he grew up in the village of Vrindavan, herding cows, serving his foster father, Nanda Maharaj. Some others say I'm a Kshatriya. But my Kshatriya behavior is questionable as well, because I even killed my maternal uncle. My position in the world is uncertain. And actually also I'm a wimp, because out of fear of the kings, who I knowingly provoked enmity with, I have taken shelter in the ocean. You're so qualified, I'm so unqualified. So in this way he began to tease her. And then he changed his tack a little and said, actually, I only married you to spite my enemies, right? Because they were so attached to you. You were obviously so beautiful, so qualified, so many kings wanted to marry you. Therefore, just to spite them, I stole you away and married you. To further torment them. But actually, I don't really care for you that much. And thirdly, and then finally he said, and actually I'm simply interested in self-realization. I don't care for wife, children, all that sort of stuff, family life. It's all a temporary illusion anyway. I'm interested in self-realization. So, the conclusion is, you know, in hindsight, since it's obvious that you've made a mistake, you're now free, you can go and choose another husband. from many of the qualified kings of the world who would fall head over heels to serve you. And this was, of course, completely absurd because Rukmini Devi had fully grown up sons by that stage to Krishna. She was completely attached. She also knew that Krishna was the personality of Godhead. Therefore, and there's no such thing as divorce in the Vedic culture. So it was completely crazy proposal by Krishna. But what she felt when she heard these things was an intense fear. Now I may be separated from the Lord. After many, many births, I have obtained the association of the Lord as my husband. And now, within a moment, I could lose that. And this put things in perspective for her. Because she was, you know, because Krishna spent so much time with her, she was a little bit proud, a little bit familiar, just a little bit. And she was thinking, yeah, Krishna's attached to me. But then Krishna immediately revealed that at any moment he could leave her. And this was intensely fearful reality to her. So she became, the more she contemplated this possibility, the more fearful she became, and her mind became bewildered. And so many things happened, and she eventually just fainted on the floor, dropped the fan, fainted on the floor. You know, she was crying, and then she fell down. And Lord Krishna was like, "Oh, this is not what I intended. I was simply wanting to see if I could provoke loving anger in the dearmost of my consorts." And then he said, "Oh, but since, because of her sobriety, her gravity, and her intense and chaste devotion to me, she's taken it seriously." So his heart immediately softened, understanding, you know, relating to the mood of his devotee properly, reciprocating properly. He then thought, "I must console her now." So he picked her up. He manifested his forearm form, because Rukmini Devi is Lakshmi. So originally, you know, in the spiritual world, Lakshmi Devi relates to Lord Narayan. So with two arms, Krishna picked her up, and then with the other two hands he smoothed her hair back. Sounds like something's going on.
I would say
because there's no
technology, that's what happens.
No, it's green.
The lights.
Okay. So he then pacified Rukmini Devi, subdued her fears, and eventually Prabhupada says that she became happy once again, and she looked at Krishna with her naturally smiling face, and then she proceeded to offer prayers, showing that she was in full consciousness of who Krishna was. She turned all of Krishna's statements around. Krishna was deriding himself, saying how unqualified he was. But Rukmini Devi cleverly took each of these statements and turned them around and showed the truth behind the statements. This is a hobby of devotees. I think it's Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur himself, I believe. He loves to do that. You know, when Shishupal blasphemes Krishna in the arena of the Rajasuya sacrifice, the acharyas, they take great delight in taking all those statements and then flipping them and showing and, you know, reinterpreting the grammar and the words to show how actually they're glorifications of the Lord. So each of these verses, starting from yesterday, corresponds to a previous verse earlier in the chapter where Krishna was deriding himself, and she then takes that and turns it around. This particular verse where Rukmini Devi says, "Yes, my Lord Rukrama, you lie down within the ocean as if afraid of the material modes, and thus, in pure consciousness, you appear within the heart as the super soul." So Rukmini Devi is, in one sense, refuting Krishna's statement that he has taken shelter in the ocean out of fear of the kings. You know, he's taken shelter at the Dwarka fort, the ocean fort, out of fear of the kings. He's saying, yeah, it is. You have taken shelter at the ocean. But what is that ocean? That is the Garbhodak ocean. And who are the real rulers of this world? They're not the kings, that's for sure. They are the material modes of nature, which control the conditioned souls. So this is a very important point. And Hridayananda Das Goswami, he points out in the purport that devotees aren't interested in climbing the ladder of supremacy in this world, trying to get to the top of the heap. Once upon a time, I think I was sitting on an airplane and I saw a PlayStation ad on the TV. It was a very clever ad, actually. You have a couple walking down some streets, it looks like Venice, you know, some Venice or France. They're holding hands and they've got some shopping. And they're walking down and then suddenly they, wow, their eyes go wide as if they're seeing something in the distance. And you don't know what that thing is. And they throw their bags aside and start running. And then there's a series of shots of all people just converging on something from all different directions, running up the streets. Wow, look at that. Scrambling up the streets, pushing each other aside to try and get in front. And then they start scrambling up and you can kind of see people scrambling over one another. And you're thinking, what is this thing? What have they seen? And then gradually the camera pans out and what you see is a massive mountain of people. Massive mountain of people scrambling over one another. Just all piled up like into a big peak. And then it zooms into the peak of this mountain. And there's people are pulling and they're struggling and they're climbing over one another. And then one person gets to the top and yeah! Standing at the top of the heap, yeah! Throw their arms up in victory. And then another person comes and pulls them down and jumps up, yeah! And then it says, PlayStation, play hard. So the idea is actually quite profound about the nature of this material world. The conditioned souls scrambling, pushing each other aside to try and obtain supremacy, to get to the top of the heap, if only for a moment, to revel in the glory of being the number one dog, the top dog. But of course, you know, when you get to the top, you think, wow, now I'm at the top, how glorious. Everyone must admire me. But of course, it's not true. Because in the material world, everyone's envious. So, everybody's simply envious of you. That's all. If you're at the top of the heap. So, of course, there's so much struggle to get up there, to the top, to get into a position of power and a position of leadership. And one thinks he's acting independently. It's an independent desire. An independent aspiration. But no, it's not. It's a lusty aspiration. And what does lust come from? Rajagun, the mode of passion. One thinks one's conquering. But actually one has been conquered. One has been conquered by one's lower nature. Lust, anger and greed. And of course, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the earlier cantos, Canto 7, we have a very nice illustration of this. Hiranyakashipu, the paramount materialist, as Keshava pointed out recently, it means Hiranya means gold, And Kashipu means soft bed, or the pleasures of the soft bed, which of course is sexual pleasures. So this was what he was all about. And he was very powerful due to his austerity and penance. And you know, he put a lot of energy to achieve, put in a lot of energy to achieve his ambition. Of course, this is necessary for any worthwhile thing. Not so worthwhile thing, but for any hard to achieve thing, you have to put in a bit of hard work, including in devotional service. We shouldn't be afraid of putting in hard work to achieve, you know, purity, to cleanse the heart, and to achieve great things for the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Anyway, Hiranyakashipu, he performed great austerities, and eventually obtained the benediction of Lord Brahma. And with this power that came from this benediction, he then proceeded to conquer the 14 planetary systems. He proceeded to take over. Of course, he couldn't get right up to Lord Brahma's planet and the planets of the great sages, but he conquered the heavenly planets. The demigods were offering obeisances to him. And once he'd done that, he was reveling in his glory. He'd drink celestial intoxicants. He'd enjoy amorous pastimes with his various consorts and mistresses. And he thought, now I am happy. But then he had one son, Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj wasn't interested in these things. He was a devotee, pure devotee. And as much as Hiranyakashipu tried to shape Prahlad Maharaj to his will, to turn him into the prodigy, the disciple, soon he will be the next Hiranyakashipu. He will follow in my footsteps, conquer and lord it over this universe. That was his aspiration. It's a natural aspiration for any father. Chip off the old block. But despite all his power and influence, you know, and fearful disposition, you know, he could inspire fear even in the demigods. They came and bowed down at his feet and offered him so many things. But Prahlad Maharaj, just a small boy, he couldn't intimidate him. So stubborn was Prahlad Maharaj, so fixed in transcendental consciousness. And several times he tried to educate him, send him to school, teach him how to divide and conquer, you know, how to sit on top of the economic system, you know, all the materialistic arts. He tried to train him, but Prahlad Maharaj wasn't interested. He thought, this is all a big illusion. This is foolish. And then in the recess, in the downtime at school, he tried to influence his schoolmates to become Krishna conscious. And several times, Hiranyakashipu would take Prahlad Maharaj on his lap and says, now my boy, you must have woken up. What is the best thing you've learned in school today? Hoping to hear some, you know, some childish remark showing that he's growing up to be a good materialist. But Prahlad Maharaj would simply respond with devotional statements. And the real goal of life is what? The nine processes of devotional service, etc. Anyway, towards the very end of his frustrated attempts to Hiranyakashipu's frustrated attempts to re-educate his son, to brainwash him, to turn him into a proper materialistic enjoyer. Towards the end of his attempts, Hiranyakashipu was so frustrated and fried. Eventually, he even tried to kill Prahlad Maharaj in so many ways, but he couldn't be killed because he was protected by the Lord. And finally, Hiranyakashipu We'll read these a couple of verses, because it's very fascinating. Glad Maharaj was a heavy preacher. Hiranyakashipu said, "O most impudent, most unintelligent disruptor of the family, lowest of mankind, you have violated my power to rule you." Whoa. What a fry, you know. So attached to controlling and enjoying. And to have somebody rebel against that, for somebody intensely in the mode of passion and ignorance like Hiranyakashipu, it was too much. "And therefore you are an obstinate fool." The conclusion is, you are a fool because I can't control you. "Today I shall send you to the place of Yamaraj." So, you know, one time the devotees were with Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and they went for a walk. And Prabhupada was walking along, and he said, "So, tell me, what is the greatest pleasure in this material world?" The devotee said, "Oh, isn't it obvious, Prabhupada? Sex life." And Prabhupada says, "No, that is not the greatest pleasure. The greatest pleasure is killing." And nobody's like, "Oh, really?" And then Prabhupada proceeded to explain that the real aspiration of the living being is to become God. And what does it mean to be God? To be the supreme controller. To control others. Of course, in the material world, that's a pretty hard thing to do, because you're struggling against everybody else who's also got the same aspiration. So one of the most complete expressions of control over another living being is to snuff out their life, to finish them off. "You won't obey me? Then I'll kill you. I'll finish you." And of course, this is the ultimate expression of the control of God, the supremacy of God for the materialists, thinking they're independent their whole life, and then suddenly they find out that they're not, because they can't stop their death. So Prabhupada says, Krishna appears to the atheist as death. The realization that I am subjugated to some higher power, because I don't want to die. So Hiranyakashipu wanted to, this was his last stab to control Prahlad Maharaj. If I can't control him and bend him to my will, let me kill him. "My son Prahlad, you rascal, you know that when I am angry, all the planets of the three worlds tremble, along with their chief rulers, by whose power has a rascal like you become so impudent that you appear fearless and overstep my power to rule you?" So he's curious. Where does this child get such strength that he can resist my will, which is so powerful? Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear king, the source of my strength, of which you are asking, is also the source of yours. Indeed, the original source of all kinds of strength is one. He is not only your strength or mine, but the strength of everyone. Without him, no one can get any strength. Whether moving or not moving, superior or inferior, everyone, including Lord Brahma, is controlled by the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the supreme controller and time factor, is the power of the senses, the power of the mind, the power of the body, and the vital force of the senses. His influence is unlimited. He is the best of all living entities, the controller of the three modes of material nature. By his power, he creates this cosmic manifestation, maintains it, and annihilates it also." Now this is when Prahlad Maharaj gets really profound, cutting to the essence of Hiranyakashipu's actual predicament. Prahlad Maharaj continued, "My dear father, please give up your demoniac mentality. Do not discriminate in your heart between enemies and friends. Make your mind equipoised toward everyone. Except for the uncontrolled and misguided mind, there is no enemy within this world. When one sees everyone on the platform of equality, then one comes to the position of worshipping the Lord perfectly. In former times, there were many fools like you who did not conquer the six enemies that steal away the wealth of the body. These fools were very proud, thinking, I have conquered all enemies in all 10 directions. But if a person is victorious over the six enemies and is equipoised towards all living entities, for him there are no enemies. Enemies are merely imagined by one in ignorance. So what Prahlad Maharaj is pointing out to his father is that you may have conquered the universe, but if you haven't conquered your own mind and senses, you're still a slave. This is a very important point. Before, you know, our first duty, as Prabhupada says, one's first duty in all spiritual affairs is to control one's mind and senses. Without controlling one's mind and senses, one cannot make any advancement. And Prabhupada says, unless there is freedom, what is the meaning of activity? If it's simply, if one is simply bound up in the material energy, forced to act. What is that verse? Prakriti kriyamanani gune kamani savasya ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. That the bewildered spirit soul, or the deluded spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by the modes of material nature. So actually, we're like puppets on a string in the conditioned state. And we're dancing. And look at me dance. But actually, no, our activities, our thoughts, everything is controlled by the modes of nature. It's like you might think you've got so many things you could do, but really what Maya is presenting you with is a multi-choice. Do you want to do A, B, C or D? And that's the extent of your independence. Within the mind, Maya puts a few options and then you think, oh, well, I'll do this materialistic activity, I'll do that materialistic activity. But actually your freedom is very limited. And actually all your ideas and your thinking patterns, they're controlled by the modes. So, the first victory needs to be the internal victory. The victory to control the mind. Gandhi said, famously, that the real battle has to be fought within. Conquering the world around you is no substitute for conquering your own mind and senses. Many times, the conditioned souls make it a substitute. You know, if I can't actually control myself, at least I'll control others and I'll, you know, get some external status. But in the society of devotees are too sharp for that. Devotees know what's going on. So, to simply, you know, think that you'll get the respect of the devotees, which we should want. We should want the respect of the devotees. Because the living being is always looking for the admiration of someone. Everyone wants to be appreciated. So you've got, at one point in your life, in your devotional life, in your road to Krishna consciousness, you have to decide whose appreciation you want. Do you want appreciation of worldly people? Or do you want appreciation of the devotees? Because they're two very different things, and you can't have both, really. Because what the materialists admire, the devotees think is foolish. And what the devotees admire, and the materialists don't value. Oftentimes materialists think as Ridhwananda Das Goswami points out, you know, in the way he translates one verse, Actually, Krishna says it himself. I am a wandering vagabond who is worshipped by deluded fools. That's what materialists often think of devotees. Is, where's your drive to get ahead in the world? My Gurudev pointed out once, he was giving one class to a lot of new devotees, and he was pointing out that parents and family members, they often notice the transformation in their relative who becomes a devotee. And one thing that subtly disturbs them is their loss of passion, their loss of aspiration for getting ahead in the material energy. You say, where's your passion? And the devotee's... And what? The devotee has a kind of cynical... This actually pointed out in the next purport that the devotee is cynical about the material energy. And they say, this is an unhealthy way to think. One must be optimistic, think positively. One must be driven to get ahead. Whatever it is, just choose something. Just choose some goal in the material world and go for it. One cannot be idle, because then one goes into the mode of ignorance. That is not correct. One should be in the mode of passion. So, the devotees, they lose that drive. They still act, but they act with a bit of detachment. So the first victory has to be that conquering of the mind and senses. That qualifies one for taking responsibility in the Krishna consciousness movement. At least to some degree one has to do that. Because unless one does that, there's no value of one's so-called leadership or influence. One has to clearly understand that I am a servant of the Lord. Understanding that I'm always a servant in one form or another. Either I'm going to be a servant of the material senses, as Hiranyakashipu is, a servant of the material senses and mind, his own materialistic ambition arising from the mode of passion, arising from false ego, arising from envy, ultimately, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead extrapolated into envy of all living beings. One is a servant of that illusion. And we're all, in the conditioned state, we're all little Hiranyakashipus. The same problem, just on a small scale. So I'm either going to be a servant of that, or I'm going to be a servant of the Lord. And then understanding that. Also, that the energies of the Lord, they're so powerful, they can cover my consciousness so easily. Devi hi ushu gunamai, mama maya dharatiya, mam eviye prapadyante, mayami tam tarantite. That this material energy, which floods our consciousness with foolish ambition, that is so powerful. That cannot be overcome by the strength of your own will. One must take shelter of the personality of Godhead. Then one will be able to be in clear consciousness. Then one will be able to see things as they are, by the mercy of the Lord. Devotional service is best practice in sattva gun, which then becomes sudasattva, eventually, pure consciousness. Sattva gun means clarity. One's ambition is self-realization. The yogi acts only for purification. So in such a consciousness, then one becomes qualified to take on more responsibility. And we need many, many such qualified devotees. Krishna consciousness movement is crying out for them. For all of us to become more qualified, to take responsibility, to control our own, to do the first duty. Leadership begins with self-leadership. To do the first thing and to understand what is going on with us. what our predicament is, what the forces are that are acting upon us, and learning the techniques, the science of bhakti yoga in order to become liberated from such control, to fix the mind with knowledge. With knowledge you can fix the mind. The mind is broken. It's malfunctioning. But with knowledge you can fix it. You can become free from so many illusory anxieties, hankering, lamenting. You can learn how to conduct yourself correctly with the proper attitude. You can learn the Vaishnava etiquette, how to see everyone as your master and serve them in such a spirit. Even if you have, like externally, you seem to have some position of responsibility or control, you still have to see yourself as a servant. Prabhupada saw himself as a servant of his disciples. Otherwise, why did he go to such effort to rescue them, to train them up? He saw himself as a servant of his spiritual master, therefore he did so many things. And in such a state of consciousness, one can act very powerfully, with great determination and steadiness. So this is required, that we do this, and that we take Krishna consciousness seriously, because it is actually real. It really works, the Krishna consciousness process. There is such a state of consciousness as Krishna consciousness. And you see it embodied in the great spiritual masters, and how powerful they can act, and how liberated they are, and how also just wonderful their association is. So Srimati Rukmini Devi is pointing out, the real enemies of this world, the real rulers of this world, are not the so-called top dogs on top of the heap. You can visualize that heap. They're not the rulers of the world. They're simply slaves of the world. So devotees, they become free, and then they become qualified to take on responsibility. And it's been pointed out here that they're generally not attracted, to that, simply that false ego position of being in control. But as a service, they'll do it because it needs to be done, and they're asked to do that. They'll take up the leadership positions, but they won't get into the power politics and all that sort of stuff. Not interested in that. Simply interested in serving for the benefit of all. So there's quite dense philosophy in these verses. Rukmini Devi's an intelligent, very intelligent woman. All right, we'll stop here.